Welcome to Community Alert. Not if, but when. Positive preparation for disaster with Ted Adams and Mike Williams. Keeping you informed on how to get ready and be prepared. Tuesdays at 11 a.m. and 9 p.m. and Saturdays at 1 p.m. on AM 1290, the Santa Barbara News Press radio station.
Hello, Santa Barbara. Welcome to Community Alert, Not If, But When, Positive Preparation for Disaster on KZSB AM 1290, your Santa Barbara News Press radio and newspress.com live on the internet today. Charlie Johnson sitting in for Ted Adams. Welcome to the show again, Charlie.
Good morning, Michael.
Got a great guest today. He's on hold from Roseville, California, Aaron Hunt from Union Pacific Railroad. But before we get to him, Ted, welcome to the show. How you doing?
Hey, Mike. I'm doing incredibly well. These folks at Santa Barbara Cottage Hospital are just doing a great job for me, and I owe a great debt of gratitude to them, all the way from Melinda, who's the administrator, all the way down through Diane and Heather and Rick, who are the folks that are doing the physical therapy. They do a great job. They keep me limber and keep me sweating, you know. But I'm getting a lot of confidence. I'm able to move around. They're teaching me how to use a sink and a toilet only with one hand and one leg, and it's a real big job for them, and they're putting confidence back into place, and looks like I'll be back up on the mountain within the week, so I'm looking forward to that, of course, and I got to make some adjustments up there, but considering it was just a little over 2 weeks ago that this thing happened, it's amazing how fast it can go back together, and I'm so appreciative, you know.
Well, you're still seeing guests, correct?
Pardon?
You're still seeing guests in your new room.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, okay. I'm in room 201 at the Rehab Center, Cottage Hospital, the old Pinecrest facility. Love to see folks if they want to stop by and say hi. It's best after 3 in the afternoon because the rest of the day they got me working out.
Okay, well, very good. Ted, I appreciate you checking in. Ted Adams injured in a head-on traffic collision 2 weeks ago, now out by Lake Kachuma, recovering at Cottage Hospital. Let's see, a couple of things under the announcement column. The Firefighter Alliance, Santa Barbara Firefighter Alliance annual ball will be Friday, 3rd, June 2011, 6:30 at the Coral Casino. They're selling tickets now, and this is going to sell out. So if you're interested in attending the ball, give them a call at 708-3565. That's 708-3565. Or visit their website at sbfirealliance.org. Well, welcome to the show, Aaron Hunt. You're the Director of Corporate Relations and Media for the Union Pacific Railroad. I appreciate you taking time out to talk to us today.
Hey, great to be with you today, Michael and Charlie. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you for coming down a couple weeks ago to the EPIC meeting. The issue of the railroads tends to slip off the radar sometimes as we talk about public safety, and yet you guys are a huge impact on a lot of communities, including Santa Barbara.
Yeah, you know, the railroad is a big part of America. America really has the premier freight railroad network in the world, and so Union Pacific is a big part of California. We merged with Southern Pacific Railroad in 1996, and today we operate in 23 states and have 33,000 miles of track, over 43,000 employees, and our trains operate through 7,300 communities. So we're constantly trying to reach out to communities and look for ways to build better relationships and be a good community partner.
Well, I know here in Santa Barbara, one of the issues with the railroad is folks getting hit by the trains, or freight trains, Amtrak, what have you. Can we talk a little bit about Operation Lifesaver and what Union Pacific is doing to try to help reduce these deaths as well as educate the public about walking on the right-of-way?
Operation Lifesaver is a national nonprofit. It's gone international. It started here in the United States. It began in Idaho and was a collaboration between Union Pacific Railroad, elected officials in Idaho, and concerned community members. And from that point, it has grown to become a national nonprofit, and there are chapters in each state. And the California Operation Lifesaver organization is very involved in trying to raise awareness for the need to practice safety around railroad right-of-way. And like you said, this is a problem for the railroad industry, not just Union Pacific freight trains, you know, but it includes Amtrak passenger trains and other passenger entities in cities across California. But We collaborate these days with Operation Lifesaver in a number of different ways. We give presentations in schools. Operation Lifesaver will go into the schools and talk to the young people about, you know, the need to avoid using railroad right-of-way as a walking path, as a cycling path, or any other kind of recreation area. And then we also do a number of safety train events in key areas around the state, where we will invite the media and work with local law enforcement to go out and operate a train in a particular corridor where we've had problems with trespassing. And I use the word trespassing because anyone who enters railroad right-of-way is by default trespassing according to federal law. And so we try to remind people that that is a major issue, and that local law enforcement and railroad police can issue citations for that. And it has been something that we've been working on consistently, and that we found to really improve awareness of the dangers of railroad right-of-way.
Aaron, this is Charlie. I got a question for you regarding how are the high school youth responding to these presentations that you're bringing to their schools?
You know, that's a really good question for Operation Lifesaver specifically. They focus a lot on working with the schools. And here in California, the state coordinator is Pete Adlin, and they do a great job. And they've done some really creative things with reaching out to different school districts where there are lots and lots of trains operating around schools and in corridors where kids are walking to school or riding their bikes. And, you know, the students are often impacted deeply by the presentations that Operation Lifesaver will give. And they look at things, it really introduces them to a new perspective. And really helps them see that, you know, railroad tracks are dangerous. Even though these young people are thinking to themselves, I could definitely hear a train or feel the rumblings of a train at a distance. These classes really help them understand that trains can be elusive and very quiet and surprisingly quick.
It's amazing to see and hear what you're talking about, because I think in the past you could feel that rumble and you could hear. And I noticed today that, wow, some of these trains are just super quiet and smooth, and you don't have a sense that they're even close to you.
That's a great point, Charlie. You know, we're constantly working to apply new technologies to our locomotives to make them more fuel efficient, to make them, produce fewer emissions, and all of that lends itself to a quieter locomotive. And our tracks these days we maintain them so often. We're going to invest $3.2 billion across our system this year alone on track enhancement and other types of infrastructure investments. And so all of that goes to a quieter railroad. And so folks that think that they can predict when a train will come around a bend, they are mistaken, and that's a message that we need to continue to reiterate.
You know, I'm in Sacramento a lot, and Union Pacific owns Sacramento, thanks to Southern Pacific, I guess. But there is a main line that goes right down through the heart of Sacramento, somewhere around the 1800-1900 block, and it's a no-horn zone. How does that work? Because I know that that's not unique to Sacramento, that you guys are required by local ordinances to run as quietly as possible. Doesn't that create a safety problem for your folks?
So it's a great point. Quiet zones are an interesting challenge across the country for railroads. What happens if a community requests a quiet zone is the city will create a plan first and submit that plan to the Federal Railroad Administration and other regulators, and also to the dominant railroad in the area. And what will happen is a number of additional safety measures have to be put in place for a quiet zone to be installed. And so that would include things like additional lights and gates, different types of approach mechanisms at turn signals, and other things that prevent automobiles and cyclists and others from putting themselves in danger on railroad right-of-way. And so that's an example of what has happened at Sacramento in certain corridors. Quiet zones are fairly rare. In most areas where we operate trains, you'll hear our horns, and the locomotive engineers and conductors are federally required to sound those horns whenever they enter a grade crossing.
Not to interrupt, but we're up to our first break here. Richard Dugan working the board for us today. Charlie Johnson setting in for Ted Adams, Mike Williams on Community Alert. Not if, but when, positive preparation for disaster with Aaron Hunt, Director, Corporate Relations and Media with Union Pacific Railroad. We'll be back after these announcements.
Not at all.
Welcome back to Community Alert, Santa Barbara. Not if, but when. Positive preparation for disaster. And is it a beautiful day outside?
It's gorgeous.
I was up in Humboldt and Trinity and Del Norte counties and a little bit of Siskiyou over the last week, and the weather's just been great all over California. Little landslide problem up at Gerberville that took us around the long way, but other than that,
hey, detours. But
talking about weather, we were talking during the break with Aaron. You just got back from Donner Pass.
Yeah, we've been. We've had quite a bit of snow up there over the last few weeks. In fact, we had 13 feet over a seven-day period, and we had to shut down our line over Donner, which is a critical corridor for us, and had to shut it down for 5 days while we cleared the snow.
So that requires you to divert primarily to where? Southern California?
We diverted traffic through the Central Valley of California and then over our Feather River Canyon route. And but we had a team of 100 people on Donner working 24/7 to remove the snow, and we pulled out our historic rotary snow blowers. These things were built in the 50s. One of them that we have that we operated on the mountain just last week was built in 1937, and these things have a 16-foot rotary snow blade on the front, and they throw a plume of snow about 50 feet in the air. Pretty awe-inspiring sight. But we got the mountain cleared in about 5 days, and despite 564 inches of snow, which is 150 inches above normal at this time of year, we got the mountain back open, and we're running trains.
Aaron, where do you keep that kind of equipment? I mean, obviously, it's got to be fairly close by.
Yeah, we store it in our J.R. Davis rail yard in Roseville. That's the largest manifest rail yard in the western U.S., and so we store our equipment there, and it's just right down the hill from Donner, and we can get it up there pretty quickly and put it into action.
So now, is that essentially an engine with special adapters on it, or what?
Yeah, it's a diesel electric motor with this special equipment on the front end, and these rotary blades are awe inspiring. I mean, the fact that I'll have to send you folks an image, but the fact that these things were built decades ago just speaks to the ingenuity of the American work ethic, and it's amazing to see it out there working on these snow covered tracks these days.
You know, I was impressed during the Gaviota fire here in Santa Barbara. It took out a couple of your bridges along the coast, and I thought for sure it was going to be months before that rail line was opened up because of the damage it was done. And yet all this specialized equipment shows up, and it was like it just, as it crawled across the old trestle, it was removing the damaged stuff and putting down new stuff and just inching forward. And that bridge was done in a matter of days instead of months. It was just very impressive.
You know, our business is getting product to and from our customers, and we have to have our infrastructure available to us, and we don't have a lot of help, but we kind of have to be self-reliant in that regard, and so we have to work quickly whenever we have a derailment of any kind, or if we have a bridge, like you said, that where there's a fire and there's damage, we have to get in there very quickly and get that line reopened. And we pride ourselves on that. And there are people at the railroad that have been doing this a long time, and they're dedicated to that. And they understand that, you know, we really feel like we're helping the economy move forward.
Yeah, I just got an email here from Trinity County. Pat Frost, he's with the Trinity County Resource Community Development District, and they're doing a lot of fire safe work up there. And he's commenting about that's a lot of snow. And for Trinity County, they get their share of snow up there also. I don't think people appreciate how much snow we had this year and what an impact that's going to have on our reduction of drought problems.
Aaron, can you go back? You talked to our Epic group about the railroad over Donner Pass and how you had to use the Feather River Canyon before, and you can talk about some changes you did and how it not only improved the efficiency with being able to carry more stuff with your trains, but shortened your travel times too.
You know, the freight railroad industry has undergone a renaissance. A couple of years ago, a fairly well-known guy named Warren Buffett purchased Burlington Northern Santa Fe, one of our competitors, and a lot of shippers are returning to freight rail. The infrastructure is there. The service numbers, the service metrics, the on-time performance has improved dramatically. And so the freight industry has undergone a renaissance. And part of that is this ongoing investment that I've mentioned. And a couple of, just a year and a half ago, we finished a project over Donner where we notched a series of tunnels to give us just a little extra room, a little extra clearance on the top of those tunnels so that we could operate double stack intermodal trains through those tunnels. And what that has done is shave off about 75 miles from the previous route, which was the Feather River Canyon route. So it allows us to get product out to Chicago, New Orleans, and other areas of the interior part of the country much more quickly. And then get those containers back out to the West Coast, and it really has improved our efficiency. And it was a really interesting engineering feat that they figured out the physics of this and were able to just notch those tunnels just so that these 53-foot intermodal containers, double stacked on a well car, could be toted up the mountain and shipped out east. And it really has been a great success story for us. And we'll continue to look for ways to invest.
Well, let's talk a little bit about public safety and the railroad. We had the Seacliff incident here in Santa Barbara. Actually, I guess technically that was down in Ventura. That had a large impact on the Santa Barbara community. We've had some derailments of container cars up in the Gaviota area where they're actually literally blown off the flat cars because of the heavy winds up there. What's the protocol? How does Union Pacific deal with these kinds of problems, and how do they work with local community safety?
We have a series of protocols that we follow whenever there is a weather-related incident or other type of incident, and we partner and work in conjunction with local agencies, local emergency responders to do that. We have a number of different programs that we use to prepare for a potential problem, a potential challenge. One of those is a tank car training course that we hold in Colorado, and we invite local emergency responders to join us for that training. And we've been doing that now for many years, and it has really improved the awareness and the capability to respond to incidents that could be critical. We interface with those folks, and we have a go team process that we call it, where we have a number of folks, including communications, hazardous materials responders, and others who come in and execute a response to a severe situation. And, you know, the railroad hasn't always responded maybe the way it should, and we've taken some steps to try and improve that and do more. And we think that we're moving in the right direction. We know we've got a lot of work left to do, but that's something that we're really working hard to improve, and we think we've done so, taking steps to be able to respond to these incidents quickly. The Seacliff incident was when Southern Pacific Railroad was still owned most of the track in California, and since Union Pacific and Southern Pacific merged in the mid-90s, we're hopeful that should anything like that ever happen again, that people would feel really good about the response and the communication and the effort that the railroad would make to create as seamless as a response as possible.
Well, it's certainly one of those things that you don't want to have happen, but does happen periodically. Railroad incidents, auto train accidents, pedestrians, and what have you. We can talk about it a little bit further when we come back. Visiting today with Aaron Hunt, Director, Corporate Relations and Media, Union Pacific Railroad out of Roseville, taking time out from his trip up to Donner Pass. Charlie Johnson sitting in with for Ted Adams today, who's still recuperating. Mike Williams and the ever-diligent Richard Dugan working the slide pots for us. This is Community Alert, KZSB AM 1290, your Santa Barbara News Press Radio, and live on the Internet at newspress.com. Back in a moment. Welcome back to Community Alert, Not If, But When, Positive Preparation for Disaster. Charlie Johnson, PIO with CARP Summerlin Fire Protection District, sitting in with us today, covering for Ted Adams. Getting back to Aaron, how many trains are running actively within the Union Pacific system at any one time on an average? And how do you communicate with them?
Well, you know, we have over 8,000 locomotives on our system, and so You have an unbelievable amount of trains operating daily on our network, and we have a state-of-the-art dispatch center based in Omaha, Nebraska. It's bomb-proof, it's weatherproof, and then we have backup systems to back that place up. Then we also have regional dispatch in the various states where we operate trains, and so there's a broad network that manages the dispatch of these trains, and then for as you boil it down to the local level, and you take a look at motorists operating their cars and trucks and other vehicles around railroad crossings, certainly whenever they approach a grade crossing, they should look and listen and be very alert. They shouldn't be talking on their cell phone. They should lower the volume of their radio and be very aware of what's going on. And that's even if there are lights and gates installed at the crossing. Always obey lights and gates. But if you just have a crossbuck sign, you know, be aware of what's happening and look both ways. And we like to say, look, listen, and live. Yeah. And but if there were ever a situation where a truck driver or some other type of vehicle high-centered on a railroad track, the first thing to do would be to exit the vehicle and clear yourself from the track. And then there are always 800 numbers posted at all of our crossings that folks can call, and that will immediately generate an alert through our dispatch centers, and we will halt trains and send local responders to remove that vehicle from the tracks.
Well, I'm curious, for the public's benefit, a train going 70 miles an hour is traveling is traveling 102 feet per second. What's the stopping distance for a train at that point? He sees something, and now he's got to react to it, so you have a reaction time, and then you have a stopping distance. What is that, roughly?
For a Union Pacific freight train, it's approximately 1 mile.
Wow.
So that's over 5,280 feet.
That's right.
So whatever it is that got the engineer's attention, probably he blew by before he did anything about it.
That's right. An engineer would throw the train into emergency as soon as he saw something, but typically that emergency process would take a mile before that train would come to rest.
So from an engineer's perspective, and I know you must talk to a lot of them throughout the country, what are their primary concerns? If they were on the show today, what would they want to be conveying to folks about what they see and what they think are problems?
They would first and foremost want the public to be aware that trains do not stop on a dime. And so you cannot expect that if you are on a crossing or if you are anywhere illegally on the right-of-way, regardless of the reason, they would not want you to think that that train is going to be able to stop for you. It's simply a problem of physics. It can't be done. Number two, they would want you to understand that this impacts them personally. And many of our conductors and engineers are severely affected whenever they're involved in an incident. And for that reason, we have over a decade-long program that we call peer-to-peer counseling, and it's a volunteer program where our conductors and engineers receive 12 hours of professional counseling training annually, and then they become part of this pool of volunteers, and if we ever have a train crew involved in an incident, they are immediately engaged in this program and put in touch with one of these fine volunteers. And these engineers and conductors help their fellow brothers and sisters manage through the grieving process, the process of dealing with the emotions and the mental affliction that can come from being involved in one of these incidents where essentially you're helpless.
Now, Union Pacific, do you use your own engineers and staff on the trains, or you contract that out? Because I know that came up a lot with some of the metro crashes down in Los Angeles.
All Union Pacific conductors and engineers are part of the Union Pacific team.
Okay, so you're a little different scenario. Let's get into that for just a second, too, because when you look at Amtrak or any of the other transportation Caltrans agreements that are out there that they work with Union Pacific, how do those relationships work? Because they're leasing your track time from you.
That's right. So wherever you see an Amtrak train operating on Union Pacific right-of-way, they're leasing track time, and those are Amtrak-hired engineers and conductors. And so they obviously, we are a federally regulated industry, and so the Federal Railroad Administration oversees the training programs that all engineers and conductors have to pass through and the ongoing testing process that they have to continue to perform so that they can be certified to operate locomotives of all different types, whether it's passenger, freight, or otherwise.
Now, there was a time, probably in the late 80s, early 90s, where the railroad industry in this country almost died. Isn't that that's changed a lot, though?
No question about it. There was a period there where most of the analysts and certainly Wall Street and probably a lot of the elected officials in Washington and on a local level thought that the railroad industry may go by the wayside in America. And that has proven to be the exact opposite of what has happened. And like I said earlier, we've seen a renaissance, particularly in the freight industry, and really the freight network in America is the envy of the world.
Well, it's interesting is because I travel so much throughout California, and I see infrastructure being put back in that was taken out 15, 20 years ago.
Right.
Which must be infuriating to somebody. Why are we putting it in? We just took it out.
No question about it that, railroad right-of-way and that kind of infrastructure is irreplaceable. And so that's why we're committed to such an aggressive investment plan to maintain and improve our infrastructure. And this year, $3.2 billion. Last year, we put in about $2.6 billion into our infrastructure. And has a major impact on local economies. You know, we bring in a Thai crew, a rail replacement crew of over 200 people, and they're in an area working for a week or 2 weeks at a time, staying in the hotels, eating in the restaurants. It really can create a nice spike for a local economy.
When these crews go out and do that, how many people are we talking about?
Depending on the size of the project, you may have anywhere from 25 all the way up to a couple of hundred, and you know they're busy. They're working long hours, and they're in there meant to improve the efficiency and be efficient while doing that. And of course, we look to make these projects take place in as small a window of time as possible, so that we can get trains operating on those tracks as soon as we can.
Aaron, you've talked about some of the infrastructure things. Let me draw an unfair comparison and see if you can talk about it. The airline industry, with the recent rupture of that fuselage with the skin coming off, what kind of maintenance problems do you have with your engines? Not necessarily problems, but I mean, is there anything unique to the engines that causes you to have to put extra efforts in?
We have to take a look at a number of different things in order to keep these locomotives operating safely and efficiently. We look at the wheel structure, and we have ultrasonic technology that we use now that can detect potential cracks in the wheels. And these scanners are installed in different areas of our right of way. And so as the locomotive rolls through that area, a picture is taken of that wheel. So we're looking at that. You know, we have technology that's constantly looking at our railroad ties and our rail. It's kind of, for us, it's more a a comprehensive picture that we have to look at, not just the locomotives. But with locomotives, certainly we spend a lot of time and a lot of resources maintaining the efficiency of those engines. We measure the emissions coming from all of our locomotives, and we have the greenest fleet in the railroad industry. We have a number of Tier 2 locomotives operating across our system, and we created the technology that we call the ultra-low emitting locomotives, and those are locomotives that we use in our switch yards where we're doing switching operations, decoupling rail cars and putting trains together for long cross-country trips. Those locomotives are essentially hybrid locomotives. They are the Toyota Prius of the freight railroad industry.
Right.
And Union Pacific invented that technology, and we've put it to great use, and we have, you know, over 60 of those hybrid locomotives operating in the state of California.
Well, excellent. Now we're up to our next break here. Aaron Hunt, Director of Corporate Relations and Media with Union Pacific Railroad out of Roseville. Charlie Johnson, Mike Williams, Richard Dugan on the board. This is Community Alert, KZSB, AM 1290, Santa Barbara News Press Radio, and live on newspress.com. Back after these brief messages. Welcome back, Santa Barbara. Not if, but when. Positive preparation for disaster. That's Community Alert. KZSB AM 1290, your Santa Barbara News Press Radio. Charlie Johnson sitting in today for the ailing Ted Adams, who's recovering after his traffic collision.
What am I going to do for fun once he comes back?
We'll get you back in as a guest. Aaron, any closing comments? Let's get some phone numbers and websites out for people that are interested in getting a hold of you or the Union Pacific for public information, training, and safety bulletins.
Sure. You know, the most important number for folks to be aware of is our emergency number, and that's an 888 number. It's 888-877-7267. That's a contact number that is you can get in touch with a live human being 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. And then a great resource is up.com. That's our website, and they will web surfer will find all of our contact information at up.com. Whether it's a reporter trying to contact someone, whether it's a community member who needs a community contact, that's all available for communities there at up.com.
Excellent, excellent. And you do have programs that you can bring down here to local schools and for the community on Operation Lifesaver.
Certainly, you know, people who are interested in this should definitely look at Operation Lifesaver's website, which the international site is oli.org, www.oli.org. And from there, you can navigate to the different state sites. California Operation Lifesaver has a great organization, great group of people there, and they will work with school districts, all sorts of community-based organizations to enhance awareness of the need for railroad safety.
Well, we'll go ahead and get those website addresses up on our website that goes along with the show. All these shows are indexed at wildlandresidents.org, and we'll cross-reference to those websites. Aaron, thank you very much for taking time out to visit with us. We know you're busy and appreciate your time.
Thanks so much.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Aaron Hunt, Director of Corporate Relations and Media, Union Pacific Railroad out of Roseville. Those websites, again, up.com, that's up.com, and for Operation Lifesaver, oli.org, oli.org. Going over to the Fire Safe Council side of the street, I ran into a fellow that sits on the California State Fire Safe Council. He's with the Trinity County Resource Conservation District, and they have received a rather substantial grant up there, and they are going to town on fuel mitigation projects all in and around the Junction City area, the Hay Fork area, and there's some work over on the backside of 299 going on also.
They're all under the grant?
Yes, they got a great grant up there, and he's going to be one of our future guests here on Community Alert. But I was surprised to see so much work being done. And I asked him, I said, what kind of problems are they running into? And so far, not one. So it's good. It's happening up there.
Well, you know, we down at CARP, we just did our second community-based meeting. The first one was rather disappointing. We had sent out numerous letters inviting different community groups, individuals to come and talk about what they envision that they would like to do to protect their community from wildfire. And then we had a second one in Summerlin QAD allowed us to use their facilities, which, mm-hmm. as you know, Mike, is very high-tech and
yep.
very professional. And we had a few more folks come out and share with us their concerns, and it's interesting to see that a lot of people are concerned about the invasive plant species that mm-hmm. are creating fire hazards, and that seems to be one of the focuses they want is get that stuff out of there.
Well, the Community Wildfire Protection Plan, that's something that's going on throughout the county, various jurisdictions working on theirs. It's a work in progress. It's going to take some time in a lot of areas to get that all processed
through. Well, there's a good collaboration going on, which is really good.
Well, the scoping requirements requires the public to get involved, so that nobody's trying to hide anything. You'll see these meetings being populated in the paper on schedules coming up. So CARP Summerlin is working on Montecito, is working on Santa Barbara Cities, is actually done. They're just waiting for final approval. Goleta's very actively working on theirs right now. We're sitting on a little bit of the sidelines up on San Marcos Pass to see who's going to pick up what side of what before we get into it, but they'll also be applying up in the San Marcos Pass Drop Club, East and West Camino Cielo, that area up there. So that's also going to be going on. So keep watching the paper for that. Also, regarding public safety stuff, we've got the Fire Alliance, and I want to come back and talk about this a little bit. We've got a little bit of time here. It'll be Friday, June 3rd, 2011 at 6:30 at the Coral Casino, and these folks are collecting money through nonprofit activities to redistribute back out to the fire service and some of the support groups for equipment, radio equipment. They bought the search dog, a lot of the hydraulic equipment that kind of steps outside of the normal purchasing thing. And they've done a lot with training also. They've gotten some CPR mannequins for folks, and it's been a great group. But so if you're interested in helping support these folks, that's June 3rd, 6:30 at the Coral Casino. And further information available by giving them a call at 708-3565. 708-3565, or, of course, their website at sbfirefightersalliance.org, sbfirefightersalliance.org. Or give your local fire department a call. They're all members in the support side of the Firefighters Alliance, so they're interested in talking to you. Also, I've received several emails, and I actually got some mail here at the station regarding some of the articles that Ted and I have been writing. If you have any comments, please get a hold of us. You can do it through community@wildlandresidents.org. Send something over here to the station, 1317 Santa Barbara Street in Santa Barbara, or shoot us a call at 964-7194. We're interested in hearing your thoughts, any suggestions you might have, programming that you're interested in, specific issue that you think that we should be talking about. Definitely want to hear it, or if there's some article research stuff we can do for the articles that Ted and I write on Saturday, happy to do that also. The theme on Saturday, obviously a little bit different than the theme on our radio shows, but we're trying to hit all the different angles, and we need people's support. Charlie.
You know, we've got the EPIC meeting coming up this month, and right now we've got a speaker lined up from the San Bruno pipeline explosion. He's going to be talking to us about the challenges that they had with emergency public information in the initial phases and the continuing phase of that one. So that'll be fairly exciting for all our emergency public information people.
Well, you know, one of the it's talking about this kind of stuff, it was interesting when I was up north. I was going to shoot up through Sonoma to get up to Humboldt where we were having our meetings, and we were going to be meeting in Healdsburg. But there's no point in going to Healdsburg if you can't get through Gerberville. The landslide came through there. And so we had to divert all the way out to I-5 up to 299 and come across. A couple of the guys cut across on, I think that's Highway 32 or 36, one of those that kind of cut through there. But in any event, there are a lot of folks that got cut off because of that landslide, and that included all the food, included gasoline, included all the amenities. And 299 is not the greatest of highways right now either. There's multiple places where there's been slide outs and landslides themselves, mm-hmm. and a couple of areas that are just downright dangerous to drive through over right near the Trinity Humboldt County line. And so the roads up there are in bad shape. And when I start thinking about landslides, and this was their version of Lock and Cheetah up there, no homes were lost, but close to it. But you're looking at fundamentally structural problems with the highways now up there that are going to take months and months and months to get cleaned up and fixed.
And it'll create adverse impacts.
If that were to happen here, we would have ourselves a world of hurt. And so one of the scenarios that we'd kind of like to look at here over the next couple of months is if we had another Lock and Cheetah, what would that mean, and what should we be prepared for or be thinking about, whether it be getting gas up here to the gas stations, propane, fuel, medicine, medical supply, whatever. Let's think a little bit about that and what remedies are available to us. Charlie Johnson sitting in for the ailing Ted Adams, who's over in his therapy right now as we speak. Mike Williams and Richard Dugan on the board. Community Alert, KZSB, AM 1290, Santa Barbara News Press Radio and newspress.com, streaming right now as we speak. Back in a moment. Welcome back to Community Alert. Not if, but when. Positive preparation for disaster. Charlie Johnson, Mike Williams, and Richard Dugan working for the board. Another event coming up for San Ynez Valley. It's a fundraiser for the San Ynez Valley Prepared Program. It encompasses the four Rotary Clubs in the San Ynez Valley, as well as the Santa Barbara Chapter of American Red Cross, to be held on June 11th. This is a celebrity golf tournament at the Olisaw River Golf Course. Be a lot more information coming out on this here shortly. Again, if you're interested in golfing, hanging out with some celebrities, and supporting your local Red Cross and CERT programs in the San Ynez Valley, it'll be June 11th at the Olisaw River Golf Course. Getting the high sign from Richard, we got 4 minutes to go. Any thoughts that you have on your side of the street, Richard? I mean, Frank.
Yeah, go ahead, Richard.
Frank, Jam, Sam. This stand-in guest is starting to be problematic.
Ted did that to me one time, too, you know?
Who are you again?
We need one of those things we had when we were kids, when you wrote it down, you lifted it up. The bookies used to use those things,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. Well, I think probably the one thing that we do need to bring back up to the forefront is it's that time of year again when people start getting their notices for all their noxious weeds and weed abatement and all that other stuff. And with the type of weather we've had and the rains, cutting your weeds back one time probably is not going to do it.
No, we're going to be busy cutting grass this year, and we're going to be busy chasing grass fires later this year.
And that's, I guess, the issue here, Mike, is that it's still a personal responsibility. The governmental bodies are not going to go out and do it for you. So
nope.
You have to take things in your own hands and make sure that your property is maintained in a safe and orderly manner. And if it means you got to cut the weeds twice, maybe
that's
even
what we got to do. Well, we were talking about trains traveling 102 feet per second. Fires can travel that fast also, and they don't stop at all.
No.
They keep going as long as there's something to drive them and to feed them. So, and grass is one of those moments where it's the wrong time to be cutting grass when it's on fire. So, and I know up in the past, the grass is growing like crazy up there. And
the lawns are looking really good.
Yeah.
Nice and green.
Yeah, so some of the areas that we cleared last year were the fuel mitigation projects now need a little bit of maintenance, so they'll be going back in there and doing some of that. Those of you that have grass growing on your property, now's the time to cut it. Let's get that stuff down and maybe get some of the stuff that's on the ground picked up off the ground. Also, now's a good time to be doing your brush pile burning. If you have some brush piles and you need some help burning them, give us a call, 964-7194, and we can send a couple guys over there to help you do it. Or turn you on to some other people that do that also.
You might just get a lot of calls coming in.
Oh, we do quite a few pile burns. We do a lot of them as training burns also, which is also very helpful for some of the new guys to find out how badly they want to do some of this fire suppression stuff. It's a whole different world when it's hot and dry and smoky, as you know. Again, these websites, going back to our friends from Union Pacific, Operation Lifesaver, OLI.org. That's OLI.org. And for Union Pacific, that's UP.com. That's UP.com. And next week, we'll have Frank Goss back with us. We're going to be recording a special show here Thursday. It will air in 2 weeks with Barb and Dave Hubert. They are the ones that run the CSFA, California State Firefighters Association, live steamer program. Throughout the state of California, they will be here talking not only about the steamer program and their public relations outreach throughout California, but the California Fire Museum that's currently being built in Irvine down at the old El Toro Marine Base. So we'll be interviewing them here this Thursday. That show airs in 2 weeks.
Are they going to bring the steamer in so we can see it?
The steamer will be at the June 11th Olisaw River Golf Course, and it is a fully functioning steamer. And we had it up at the Cameron event for Hollister Ranch. We were up there also. So
very impressive piece of equipment.
It comes through town frequently. So getting the high sign here from Richard Dugan, the slide pots are time to go down. This has been Community Alert. Thank you, Charlie, for taking time to be with us today. I know that Ted appreciates you sitting in for him. Community Alert, not if but when. Positive preparation for disaster. Ted Adams, Mike Williams, and Richard Dugan on KZSB AM 1290, Santa Barbara News Press Radio, and live at newspress.com. We'll see you next week. Thank you for listening.
This has been Community Alert, produced by the Wildland Residents Association, San Marcos Pass Volunteer Fire Department, in association with the Santa Barbara County Fire Safe Council. Community Alert is proud to be part of the Orpala Fund Initiative, Aware and Prepare, a community partnership to strengthen emergency and disaster readiness. If you would like to help support the program, you may send your tax-deductible donations to the Wildland Residents Association, 5655 West Camino Cielo, Santa Barbara, California, 93105. That's the Wildland Residents Association, 5655 West Camino Cielo, Santa Barbara, California, 93105. Comments regarding this Community Alert program may be sent online to community@wildlandresidents.org. That's community@wildlandresidents.org. Or you may call 964-7194. That's 964-7194. Production assistance for Community Alert is provided by Richard Dugan and Jim Williams. Community Alert, not if, but when disaster strikes.